This is the story of Homer Lee. Homer was born Hung Lee in the village of Mo Kwong in southern China in 1910. When Homer was just a toddler, his father, Hung Lok Lee, left the poverty of rural China to seek a better life for his family in Gam San, Golden Mountain, America. Homer, his mother, his two brothers, awaited the return of their father for over a decade. And then in 1926, Homer received a present from the father he barely knew, a coaching book, 10 densely packed pages detailing a fictitious life that Homer would assume for the next 40 years. Say your father was born in the United States, the book said, that his own father had come here and had a laundry. It included a long list of questions and answers. How many houses are in your village? Who lives to the house on the right of yours? How many steps to the front door? At age 16, Homer Lee was about to discover Gold Mountain for himself. This is the story of Homer Lee, but it is also the story of tens of thousands of Chinese immigrants who entered the United States in the first half of the 20th century. In the mid-1800s, thousands of Chinese immigrants came to the United States in search of Gold Mountain. But harsh and discriminatory laws forced them from the gold fields into low-paying, menial work as laborers on the Central Pacific Railroad, in California's fisheries, and in the laundries of San Francisco. Anywhere cheap labor was needed. But an economic depression in the 1870s and resulting unemployment created an even harsher backlash against the immigrants. And in 1882, the US government passed the Chinese Exclusion Act, barring further immigration.
47th Congress, Session 1, 1882, Chapter 126. Whereas, in the opinion of the government of the United States, the coming of Chinese laborers to this country endangers the good order of certain localities within the territory thereof. The coming of Chinese laborers to the United States is hereby suspended, and during such suspension, it shall not be lawful for any Chinese laborer to come to the United States. Hereafter, no state court or court of the United States shall admit Chinese to citizenship.
Few exceptions were made. Only students, diplomats, and merchants were allowed. But immigration officials could not bar the children of U.S. citizens. And so arose a generation of paper sons and paper daughters.
From time to time, the Chinese went back to China and claimed to have been married and established a family, at least on paper. About 90% boys and 10% girls. They would return on re-entry certificates. From time to time, they would bring in their alleged children. That was the basis of our work on the Board of Special Inquiry, testing the right of these new applicants to enter and remain, because they were coming in as alleged or potential citizens and not aliens. Immigration Inspector Number 2, 1929 to 1961.
I didn't really want to come, but my father bought me a paper. I figured I'd come and stay for 3 months or so and then go back. My father and three uncles were already here in the United States. The man who claimed me as his son came from Mexico. There were some contradictions in our testimonies, so we hired an attorney. It was no use. They deported me. Mr. Yip, age 26, in 1921.
A scarcity of records allowed hopeful immigrants to buy papers identifying them as the sons and daughters of U.S. citizens, with the details of their fictitious lives recorded in coaching books that were studied for months and memorized in preparation for the all-important interrogation by immigration officials. It was the destruction of San Francisco's Hall of Records in the earthquake and fire of 1906 that provided Homer Lee's opportunity. Hung Lok Lee argued that he was a native-born son of a Chinese laundryman, Raised in San Francisco, he had returned to China, where his son had been born. Without records, Hung Lok Lee's fiction could not be disproved, and so Hung Lee became Homer Lee as he left home for the first time. For Homer was to be 24 days of seasickness, so bad that he did not eat at all in the 8-day stretch between Tokyo and Honolulu. Finally, the boat landed in San Francisco, and Homer boarded another ferry to Angel Island, the Ellis Island of the West, simply known to its inhabitants as Island. There, a rigorous process of interrogation was set up to ferret out the illegal paper sons and limit the number of Chinese coming into the country. The process was intimidating and frightening for most. The questions detailed and irrelevant. Each member of the family was interrogated separately and repeatedly held in isolation from each other and from San Francisco's Chinese community. A single discrepancy in answers could be enough to disallow entry. Not surprisingly, even those with legal grounds to enter the U.S. used coaching books.
We started by getting the data on the applicant himself, his name, his age, any other names, and physical description. Then we would ask him to describe his family, his father, his boyhood name, marriage name, any other names he might have had, his age, and so forth. Then we would go down the line. How many brothers and sisters, describe in detail? Then the village, the district, how many houses it was composed of, how arranged, how many houses in each row, which way the village faced, what was the head and tail of the village, then to describe the house, the next door neighbors, how many rooms, describe them, what markets they went to. Sometimes it would take 3 or 4 hours to examine each one. Immigration Inspector Number 2, 1929 to 1961.
When someone made a mistake during the interrogation, coaching information was sneaked into Angel Island from San Francisco by Chinese kitchen helpers. The information was hidden in a newspaper and tossed to a particular person assigned to receive the newspaper. If the guard should try to seize the message, we were all prepared to fight him. Mr. Leung, age 24, 1936.
If the inspector asks you how far your village is from the bamboo and trees, you answer, I have no bamboo trees in my village. There are only bamboo and trees behind the hill of Yongbin Village. Be sure to study and memorize the above questions and answers right away. After you get through with them, don't forget to destroy this letter. I herewith enclose a photo of your paper father. Study his features and do not fail to recognize him. Excerpt from a coaching book.
But mostly, life on Angel Island was about waiting. Bunk beds in the barracks were stacked 3 high and 2 across, allowing 100 people to sleep in a single room. Detainees spent most of their time locked in the barracks by officials who were afraid they would escape if given too much freedom. Men were allowed out only for meals, interrogations, and supervised exercise in the recreation yard. Women and children were allowed supervised walks on the grounds. During some years the station was in operation, Christian groups were allowed to bring in toys or sports equipment, a phonograph, soap, sewing supplies. Methodist deaconess Catherine Maurer was known as the Angel of Angel Island. She taught English and introduced people to American culture. The men organized a self-governing society. Thus passed life for a detainee on Angel Island, while they waited weeks, months, even years for their turn with the immigration officials or for a ruling on an appeal.
I had nothing to do there. During the day, we stared at the scenery across the barbed wires, the sea and the sky and the clouds that were separated from us. Besides listening to the birds outside the fence, we would listen to records and talk to old-timers in the barracks. Some,
due to faulty responses during their interrogations and lengthy appeal procedures, had been there for years. They poured out their sorrow unceasingly. Mr. Lowe, age 16, 1939.
I must have cried a bowlful during my stay on Angel Island. New arrivals came every 2 weeks, about 30 or 40. 3 or 4 out of every 10 would end up appealing, but I was there the longest, and I was always the one left behind. Mrs. Chan, age 23 in 1939.
With little to occupy their time or their minds, many immigrants turned to forms of classical Chinese poetry to express their feelings.
The people at Angel Island wrote poems all over the walls, wherever the hand could reach, even in the bathroom. Some were carved, but most were written with ink. It was not easy finding space on the wall to compose a poem, so sometimes when I thought of something lying in bed, I would bend over and write a poem under my bed, which was made of canvas. Mr. Ng, age 15, 1931.
It was like songs people would sing. It was very common. I didn't write on the walls, but I did compose some poems, crying at the same time. Mrs. Chan, age 23 in 1939.
No longer in China and unable to enter the United States, the poets told of displacement, anxieties, and alienation of their situation. One poet wrote, "Grievances fill my belly. I rely on poetry to express them." The poems speak of frustration, boredom, loneliness, fear, above all, sadness.
This place is called the Island of Immortals, when, in fact, this mountain wilderness is a prison. Once you see the open net, why not throw yourself in? It is only because of empty pockets I can do nothing else.
Today is the last day of winter. Tomorrow morning is the vernal equinox. 1 year's prospects have changed into another. Sadness kills the person in the wooden building.
Barred from landing, I really am to be pitied. My heart trembles at being deported back to China. I cannot face the elders east of the river. I came to seek wealth, but instead reaped poverty.
In the quiet of the night, I heard faintly the whistling of the wind. The forms and shadows saddened me. Upon seeing the landscape, I composed a poem. The floating clouds, the fog darken the sky. The moon shines faintly as the insects chirp. Grief and bitterness are entwined, heaven sent. The sad person sits alone, leaning by a window.
Most of the poems are personal laments, but there are also poems of anger and outrage displaying a rising nationalism, political statements berating their homeland for her weakness, and promising revenge on the Westerners they viewed as barbarians.
America has power, but not justice.
I will not speak of love when I level the immigration station. And an advantageous position for revenge will surely come one day. I will certainly behead the barbarians and spare not a single blade of grass.
The dragon out of water is humiliated by ants. The fierce tiger who is caged is baited by a child. As long as I am imprisoned, how can I dare strive for supremacy? An advantageous position for revenge will surely come someday.
So, too, there were poems of hope and longing, poems commiserating with and encouraging other travelers who might come to read their work, even as they themselves lost hope.
Do not forget this day when you are landing ashore. Push yourself ahead. Do not be lazy or idle.
Gains and losses are entangled in my bosom. My restlessness is a sign of self-illumination.
Unfortunate travelers everywhere wish to commiserate. Gain or lose, How is one to know what is predestined? Rich or poor, who is not to say it is not the will of heaven? Why should one complain if he is detained and imprisoned here? From ancient times, heroes were often the first ones to face adversity.
There are tens of thousands of poems on these walls. They are all cries of suffering and sadness. The day I am rid of this prison and become successful, I must remember that this chapter once existed. I must be frugal in my daily needs. Needless extravagance usually leads to ruin. All my compatriots should remember China. Once you have made some small gains, you should return home early.
Homer Lee remained on Angel Island for 6 months. He was initially denied admittance to the United States, but his father hired a lawyer, appealed to officials in Washington, and in the spring of 1927, Homer Lee set off by boat again, this time to land in San Francisco and meet his father. Between 1910 and 1940, some 175,000 Chinese immigrants passed through Angel Island. During World War II, with China as an ally, the U.S. government relaxed the exclusion laws, but it was not until the 1960s, when the immigration laws were completely rewritten, that the Chinese immigrants gained parity with other nationalities. In 1970, the remaining buildings of the immigration station were scheduled for demolition. When park ranger Alexander Weiss discovered the poems carved into the walls, monument to a shameful period of history, monument to pain and hope and fear, monument to what it is in the human spirit that turns our pain and our hope into art. Angel Island is a beautiful spot. Covered with grass and forests, it's the largest island in San Francisco Bay, once home to the Miwok Indians and now a state park and a national monument. But it was not always so.
A flickering lamp keeps this body company. I am like pear blossoms which have already fallen. Pity the bare branches during the late spring.